Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community, including News Talk 1230 WFVA advertising partners sponsoring today's program. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We're going to talk about the National Park Service this morning. It is the centennial of the National Park Service, celebrated all year long, and from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, a couple of historians, Beth Parnitza and Becky Oakes, here this morning. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning, Ted.
Happy birthday to the Park Service. When exactly was the National Park Service formed?
Sure. National Park Service was formed on August 25th of 1916. So that was Woodrow Wilson was the president who signed it into law. And there national parks existed before that. But this is kind of when the organization itself was formed. So organizations turning 100. Our park is actually has turned 89 this year. So we were incorporated into the park system a little bit later. Overall, we're very excited to kind of celebrate our organization's birthday. So,
okay. How did the idea come up, or who was the first park was?
Yes, Yellowstone was actually the first national park.
Okay.
That was in the late 1800s, so 1880s thereabouts. But basically, the idea came out of as the country started expanding, populations started moving west. Initially, a lot of the parks were natural parks. Some cultural and historical parks were introduced kind of later into the system, but. Really, the idea came out of this idea that as America's population expanded, we were starting to lose some of these natural and cultural areas that are really important to Americans kind of preserve for future generations of Americans. So people started setting aside land to kind of protect those spaces. And what eventually was realized is more and more land is being set aside, is that there really needs to be a central organization to kind of manage these lands, because at that point it was all these lands were being managed separately. It wasn't very efficient. Mm-hmm. It was kind of hard to keep track of everything. Some was owned by the government. Some was bought by private industry and given to the government. So eventually they realized we need something central in order to kind of control all of these places. So that's when the National Park Service kind of was born, if you will.
So Yellowstone was first. How long did it take to win, like the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park? When did sites that had some historical significance, how long did it take for them to kind of become part of things?
Sure. There was a big shift in the 1930s when Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park was formed in 1927, but initially it was under the War Department. So it wasn't until the 30s when the second director of the National Park Service, Horace Albright, he was a large advocate from the beginning of including historic parks and cultural parks into the system. In the 30s, with a kind of New Deal funds, that momentum from Franklin Roosevelt's kind of presidency, he was able to really initiate that shift and include a lot of historic parks into the system. The biggest batch was during 1933, Executive Order 6166, which is the dullest name for an act ever. But that's what actually incorporated our park into the system. So it really began with George Washington, the bicentennial of his birthday. That's when kind of the initial kind of push came in 1932, and then it moved beyond that from there. So
are parks still being added to the list today? Are we getting new ones?
Absolutely. So we actually just got moved over 400 national parks in the last couple of years. So there's still new parks being added as sites become available as our kind of purpose as a country and as our feelings as a country of what's constituted something that we need to protect change. New parks are added, so we're still a growing organization, which is a pretty cool thing. So,
well, for both of you, Beth, it's got to be you got to some days just go into work and look around at where you work and all the history. And we're really fortunate here. We'll get into that as we go along this morning. Just the some of the Park Service sites we have in this area, but boy, for both of you, sometimes I guess you go into work or look around and just think, I got a great job.
Yeah, that's most days. Because you do. You walk around and you think, well, I got to go into the office today. The office is on the middle of the Chancellorsville battlefield.
Yeah.
How lucky am I? You know, and that's to get kind of to the philosophical background of what Becky's been talking about is to realize that our national parks, all of them together, are our nation's heritage. I mean, this is the story of America saved in land form. And we get to be the keepers of those stories. We get to tell people every day, you know, what makes our country actually the country that we know today, how, you know, what shaped our society through time. And we get to work on some of America's most sacred ground. And we get to move to different parts of America's sacred ground every day and share those stories with the public that's eager to hear it. So we have the best jobs in the world.
Well, and I'm always, especially a lot of the programs, when you have big programs, you see it especially, of where we take so many things for granted around here. And some people save their entire life to come here for a couple of days and be able to walk around something that a lot of us just don't even think of.
Yeah, you know, for me growing up in the northern panhandle of West Virginia, we had a lot of small local history sites, but nothing at all on this scale. And I had actually never been to the park before I came here to work. And I just thought it was the best opportunity ever. I mean,
yeah.
I get to come and visit these four battlefields and spend a full summer here. And now I get to work here. And there just weren't, there wasn't that opportunity, I guess, for me as much growing up to visit these historical sites. My parents took me to some, but not as many as we could get to because we were far away from these big historical sites.
Yeah. Becky, what got you involved with the National Park Service?
Sure. I've always kind of loved history, been very interested in it. And I actually went to Gettysburg College as an undergraduate. So that kind of started my interest in the Park Service, just having a park so close to where you live.
Sure.
And it's I've always been kind of interested in historic sites, things like that. But I never really thought about the National Park Service as an organization before I went to college, which is kind of funny because I'm basically in love with the organization now. So, it was really when I started here as an intern that I kind of became interested in the Park Service itself as a system, as a kind of as for its own history. And that's really when I realized that I wanted to be a part of this great organization for the rest of my life. So, and what Beth is saying is exactly true. I mean, sometimes you get into that daily rut where you're just going to work, passing through these places, and then, you know, the sun catches the landscape just right, or a visitor comes in who's just traveled from, you know, Oregon and is so excited to be here, and you're reminded that, you know, we really do are part of something special and we really do something important. So it's a pretty amazing place.
What would you tell people? Because I run into this. I do hear people will ask or say, my son or daughter would be interested, would like to work for the National Park Service. What kind of? I know there aren't there're not a lot of Park Service jobs right now. But what would you advise either one of you? Advise people if they're interested in a career with the National Park Service? Mm-hmm. What's the best way to go about that?
Sure. I guess my biggest piece of advice is don't give up. And that sounds, you know, a little bit depressing when you just kind of phrase it like that. But, you know, it's if you truly love this organization, really want to do what we do or any part of the National Park Service. I mean, it's an incredibly diverse organization. We have, you know, people who are backcountry rescue, people who work with turtles, you know, a wide array of jobs that you can have with the Park Service. I would say don't give up because if, you know, you take the time and get the experience and make those connections and diversify your experience, show that you can really wear a lot of hats and do a lot of different things and be adaptable. That, you know, genuine passion for the job and that love of the organization is going to show through. So, you know, just keep trying, take the job you need to take to make rent, but always keep applying for those Park Service jobs and just, you know, don't give up on your dream. So,
yeah, I'd echo that. And then as sort of some tangible ways to start, you know, you can start your involvement with the National Park Service even in high school, you know, as a young person. There are a lot of places that have Youth Conservation Corps programs that bring high schoolers out to work in the parks. The Student Conservation Association, the SCA, has a lot of internships anywhere. And I look at some of their internships and still get jealous because, man, I'd love to spend a summer, you know, out at Glacier working on trails. How awesome would that be? And so there are different ways that you can get involved and get your foot in the door. And the more experience that you have with the National Park Service through internships or volunteering, the more that people will look twice at your applications, because they see, you know, like Becky said, you put in the time, you have that dedication, you have that interest, and then the passion. And there's nothing, you know, we can teach you how to be a better historian, but there's nothing that replaces your attitude or your passion for what you're doing and your love for the parks or for the places that we preserve.
When you first get into the Park Service, are you assigned a place? Like, were you, because Beth, I know you both have said you did internships. I mean, Beth, I know you were here, but can you ask to go to a certain place, or do they just assign you where they need you?
Oh, you apply directly to a park.
Oh, right to it.
Yeah, okay. So the park will list any openings, and then you apply to a place. So you know where you're going. They won't send you to some park that you aren't interested in or aren't skilled enough to work at, I suppose.
How long have you been? You've been here for a while, Beth, for at least a few years, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm really getting on in years now.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, I started as an intern in 2008. So
okay,
I've been permanent since 2011.
And you came last summer to this park, right?
No, I actually started here as an intern in 2011. So,
oh, okay.
So I've been here a while. I became a permanent in August. So
okay. Mm. Okay. So you both are veterans from around here. So now that's interesting, because I do hear a lot. You do hear chatter. You hear people talk about a career in the National Park Service. So that's interesting how it works. Beth Parnitza, Becky Oakes here from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We're talking about the centennial of the National Park Service being celebrated this year. A number of things going on will be going on in this area this year to celebrate that. We'll get into that when we come back on Town Talk this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Guests appearing on today's show are News Talk 1230 WFVA advertising partners sponsoring this broadcast. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Becky Oakes and Beth Parnitza from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park here this morning. We are talking about the centennial of the National Park Service and the Park Service centennial being celebrated here. And I know, Beth, a lot being done. I mean, you've kind of you've been kind of looking at this and working on it for quite some time to put a program together.
Yeah, we've been trying to build up. I mean, we think it's our centennial. It's our opportunity to have a party for an entire year and celebrate, you know, how far we've come, and then look ahead to see what will the National Park Service become in its second century. You know, who do we want to reach? What are our goals? And so, yeah, we've been planning a lot of different events. We're working on different other projects around the park. So, yeah, we have a lot planned.
I guess this isn't quite as intense as, I mean, it's a different kind of getting ready than you had to do for the 3 years that you dealt with the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. And I mean, those programs were so detailed, and it was just so intense. I guess this will be a little bit different.
Yeah, it's different in a lot of different ways. For the sesquicentennial, we were focusing very much on certain dates and certain events, and focusing all of our energy really on holding these big special events and talking about specific things that happened 150 years ago to that point. Whereas this year, we're looking at different ways that we can talk about the National Park Service and its history. And we're also trying to highlight some of the things that are special and unique about our park. So it's a much more spread out effort, whereas I'd say our sesquicentennial programs were very much concentrated on a certain battle anniversary or a certain anniversary of other events.
So what's planned? When does this kick off? Or when's the first? Has there been a first event yet? Have I missed it?
Not yet. So we haven't really had our first event. Our first sort of initiative that's kicked us off was a special exhibit that you didn't miss. You did see, as we were talking about, that we have up at Chatham Manor that's highlighting some artifacts from our park's history. Mm-hmm. So we've got the park's first toolbox and the pen that signed our park's legislation, as well as Ralph Happel's flat hat, so kind of an icon of the National Park Service, and Happel was one of the park's first historians.
And those artifacts are at, like you say, at Chatham, and maybe it's just that I really like artifacts, but I just thought that was a especially the pen. To me, the pen was President Coolidge who used that pen to sign it.
Yeah. So our birthday is Valentine's Day, 1927. And Calvin Coolidge used that pen to sign us into existence. Later on, he came to the park to have sort of a dedication ceremony and drove through town. And I really love that exhibit. We worked really hard on it and trying to get just a representation of the early days of the park and what it looked like and how we were founded and all of that.
I know there's some video of Calvin Coolidge in town, which is Eric Mink from the. With a historian with the Park Service, I know. Remember, a few years posted that, and there's no. Yeah. I don't think there's any. There's not sound with it, but you can see him downtown, and it's really cool.
Oh, it's just fabulous. Yeah, Eric did a blog post on it, and you can see Coolidge riding through downtown. You can see. I personally love to see not only Coolidge and historic Fredericksburg, but just to look at what everybody's wearing and how they sort of go about this ceremony process. And it's not very long footage, but it is, I thought it was really cool.
There is, at Lee Drive is where it's a rock monument, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's got Calvin Coolidge's name. And what exactly is that?
That's actually a monument to the founding of the park. So
okay,
it's basically,
that's what I thought.
So it's it's a little bit different than a lot of the monuments on our battlefield, especially the earlier ones, because although our battlefield doesn't have nearly as many monuments as Gettysburg or some of the parks that were established earlier, we do have a lot of monuments that were put up by veterans to, you know, their troops, their units, fallen leaders, things like that, mm-hmm. people like that. But this one's different. It's actually commemorating the founding of our park. So it's a monument that unfortunately is kind of driven past a lot. It's not really, it's almost become invisible in a way, which is too bad because it is one of the most unique monuments in our park, I think. So next time you're, turning onto Lee Drive from Lafayette, just take a quick look. It's right at the head of Lee Drive, and it's definitely worth, pulling over and taking a little walk over too. So.
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. No, you're right. You're right. It's got some bushes or something around it, so it's a little bit. It does kind of blend in, and you don't think to look at it. But when I walked up to it a few years ago, and I thought, this is really a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is for the founding of the park, and it's worth your while to go see it.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So, as you've been putting this program together, Beth. How have you done it, or what have been some of the things that you've looked at and things that you've wanted to focus on here?
Yeah, well, our primary focus, I think, is sort of like I said, it's twofold: to focus on park history, so highlighting stories like the Civilian Conservation Corps or just early efforts at preservation and understanding how we will preserve these battlefield lands, and then the other side is to highlight things about our park. As well as sort of the centennial goal overarchingly for the National Park Service is to reach out to new generations of folks who would come into the park. So we wanted to highlight things about our park that make us special or kind of reach out into the community to reach new audiences and to say, hey, we're a really neat place. We have a lot to offer. You know, if you want to understand a lot of the underpinnings of society today, you need to look back to the Civil War, and we have a lot to offer here.
Well, and you think about it, we've got in Fredericksburg, at Chancellorsville, at Spotsylvania, at Jackson Shrine. We have much more than most communities have, and we saw that with the sesquicentennial, with all the programs that were spread out over 3 years, and a lot of people a lot of places had a day or two and moved on.
Yeah, I can't imagine how they how they must have experienced the sesquicentennial, where ours was sort of a 3-year constant campaign almost of planning and tour leading and all that. And so, so we want to be able to use those resources. And in some ways, we wanted to use them in different ways. One of our biggest events that we're still in the planning process for is to have a Chatham concert and garden party, because a lot of times, you know, we talk about Chatham as a field hospital and as a headquarters during the Battle of Fredericksburg. But thinking about our park history and trying to find ways to use our resources in different ways, even. We're thinking, let's highlight the 1920s. You know, Chatham was revitalized greatly during the 1920s, both in terms of the interior of the house as well as the gardens put in at Chatham. And it also coincides, you know, with understanding the kind of society that created our park, that preserved our park. So, I think we have a lot of different events this year that are going to be different in style. So whether it's a garden party or whether it's a series of temporary exhibits that we're working on, we're looking for, you know, variety and again, things that celebrate who we are.
Yeah, boy, you're right. I just thought of that because I thought, boy, for you all to do a Chatham concert or garden party all at Chatham, it's just something different. Usually, if you're doing anything at Chatham, where you're walking around and talking about the Civil War aspect, and so planning for something like this and just even be able to go to something like that, kind of different. It'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's part of what we were looking to do too, is to say, hey, you know, we are turning 100. This should be an exciting time. So, you know, it's not necessarily a party every day, but but we do want to have you know, a little bit of fun with it.
Beth Parnitza, Becky Oaks from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park here. We're talking about the centennial of the National Park Service. We have much more to talk about. We will do that when we come back on Town Talk this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Guests appearing on today's show are News Talk 1230 WFVA advertising partners sponsoring this broadcast. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Beth Parnitza and Becky Oaks from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park here this morning to talk about the centennial of the National Park Service. So Becky, Calvin Coolidge was here at some point to get it going. Mm-hmm. Have there been other presidents visited the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park?
Yeah, before and after. So we have a lot of our different sites. We have, you know, presidents like George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, of course.
Lincoln was here, of course,
but,
yeah.
But Warren Harding was also here.
Okay.
And then probably some of the later presidents as well. I'm not quite as up on my late 20th century history. But we've had a lot of, presidential visits, a lot of famous people who have, recognized the importance of our park, especially speaking to kind of some of the later presidents who visited just wanted to make their own visit. A lot of other, people as well kind of visiting either, in the 1920s and 30s, kind of as we were discussing, it's a huge era for not only development of the Park Service, but just tourism in America in general. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's because of the automobile. So kind of this ease of getting around and traveling to different places, coupled with, especially during the Great Depression era, people didn't really have the money to visit Europe. So there's actually a movement within American tourism called See America First. And that's really encouraging people to take advantage of all of these places that are being saved, the infrastructure is being developed by New Deal era work programs like the Civilian Conservation Corps. So it's really very much kind of this era of building towards really kind of focusing on not only tourism as a good thing to do and a enjoyable thing for Americans to do, but also tourism as a form of civic engagement. So actually, learning about America and about how to be a better citizen by visiting our natural and cultural resources. So it's a really neat time, not only for the park, but just for kind of Americans in general to learn about their history and culture. So.
Well, the centennial following off on coming off after the sesquicentennial, mm-hmm. just it's kind of a nice kind of a follow up. There's been so much emphasis, and you couldn't, even if you didn't want to learn something about the Civil War, you did over mm-hmm. the last 3 years, even if it were just little bite sized things. But to have learned, I would leave every one of the programs I ever went to and would just think, I had no idea. I didn't know that. And you'd go and I'd Google it and I'd find, hey, you were right.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have been surprised. But this is just a nice follow up now to just learn more about the National Park Service itself. Beth, are you doing anything as far as education with schools besides the programs that you'll have scattered around through the years? Is there an education component with this too?
Yes, that's one of the stronger points, I think, of the centennial, is that the National Park Service at large has encouraged every fourth grader specifically in the nation to visit a national park this year. So one of the initiatives that isn't as much specific to our park but is a National Park Service initiative does give a national park pass, so a free pass, to every fourth grader in the country. So if you're looking to take your family on a national park visit and you have a fourth grader, this is the year to do it. But we also have, in our park specifically, we were awarded a grant called Ticket to Ride, which provides funding for transportation to students to come to the park. So if you're a teacher and you're looking to plan a field trip but need some funding for buses, this is the grant for you. And we have more information on that on our website, or you can contact our education coordinator, Peter Mogul, who would be more than happy to talk with you if you're interested in it. But yeah, we have sort of initiatives to get kids into the park, and then we're also looking to do some programs specifically at the park for kids. So we have Junior Ranger Day coming up actually on April 23rd. It's going to be one of our earliest events for kids. We're also looking to have an education day at Elwood Manor in the park, and it's going to be a little bit different than our usual education program. So if you call and schedule with the park, we'll be focusing largely on the stories of the battles here. But what we have planned for this fall at Elwood is going to be more on the mechanics, so more focused on STEM and STEAM style topics of mm-hmm. you know, what are the mechanics of firing a cannon? What's the physics behind that? What's the science of basically being a soldier or fighting in the Civil War? So I think we, again, which kind of takes us looking at our resources a little bit differently than we traditionally have. So we have a lot of different offerings education-wise, and we'd love to see fourth graders, but really students of all ages, coming into the park for these programs and just to experience their national park.
Do you get a lot of students from around here that come, say, and visit Chatham or visit some of the sites around here?
We do. And in the past couple of years, we've really been growing our educational offerings, trying to make them more complex and more just have more to offer to students in the area than just, you know, a basic tour that they could get if they came with their families. And it's reached a point where I believe in the month of April, we're pretty much booked up except for one or two days. We have a school group coming almost every day to the park, which is just fantastic news for us. So I think we have a very strong education program and it's growing.
Well, and hopefully a lot of teachers take advantage of it because you're right here. And I know I've talked to teachers in the past and a lot of them I think are just now thinking or starting to think this way and have said, I never even considered that in the past.
Yeah, well, to me it's fantastic because we hear it from kids and adults alike that there's just no sense of learning that you get better than actually walking the ground, than actually being in a place. You know, it gets you out of the school and it makes you realize how real things actually are. You know, you get that sense of, hey, this actually happened. This isn't just a story in the book that I'm reading. This actually took place and it took place right where I live. So I think it really makes our stories come alive to kids and it makes them a lot more interested in the past.
Well, and a lot of these programs, Beth, make history just come alive. I'll never forget when you and Frank O'Reilly did the Jackson Flank March, and besides it just being very long and hard and trying to envision what was that like for a soldier who was just doing this day in, day out. I was going to go home and, you know, take a nap afterwards. You know what? they couldn't do that, but just how the terrain is, and you all of a sudden you're walking and you see that all of a sudden you're just in a valley, or you see that at Slaughter Pen Farm too. Just how the terrain changes things. There's nothing like being out there.
Yeah, I think one of the most educational things that we did during the 150th was during the Jackson Flank Attack program, and we did it again at the Wilderness, was to try to line up our tour group, since we had, you know, often 150, 200 people, and try to walk through the woods in any kind of formation or organization. And at Jackson Flank Attack, we got lost. I had to stall while Frank found out where our flags were.
Yeah.
Because it was such, so it was even educational for us. How do we keep command and control of a group? How does a group move forward through that kind of terrain? And yeah, there's nothing like actually experiencing a battlefield to better understand it and to better sympathize and then to go home and take a nap and realize how tired you are.
Yeah. And they didn't have they whether it was, you know, the type of clothing or having all the everything that they had to carry and go from camp to camp. So that's a lot of good things that you can pick up from just having things here. Is there any kind of a Founders Day kind of a program or anything set for that?
Yeah, that's going to be one of our bigger programs, is that we're looking to do either on Founders Day itself or that weekend, we're going to do a big open house. So again, wanting to celebrate not only what the park has been, but also what the park is going to be. So highlighting all the different kinds of people who work for our park. So Becky mentioned earlier, you know, we have scientists who work for the National Park Service, backcountry rangers. And although we don't have, you know, a huge variety in terms of, we don't have anyone studying sea turtles, say, at our park.
Yeah.
We do have a lot of different people who work behind the scenes, you know, our law enforcement, our maintenance guys, that a lot of folks don't ever see. They see the results of their work, but they don't actually see what it is they're doing. So it's going to be an opportunity for us to highlight, you know, we do have a lot of folks who do a lot of different things that make our park run, and it wouldn't necessarily be what you'd expect. So they'll be doing some show and tell in terms of what they do, what kind of equipment they have. And so I think it'll be a great opportunity to kind of interface with the people that you don't see and the people that you do see, because the interpreters will be there too. So
the Becky, you said it was August 25th was when the National Park Service, are you doing anything special around that day, around the actual founding of the National Park Service?
Sure. Well, August 25th this year is a Thursday, so we're not doing something on what we might do, like, you know, some Facebook series and maybe a special mention on some programs. But our Founders Day program is actually going to be the 27th,
okay.
So Saturday, so that way more people can attend and more people can take advantage of it. But that's really what it's for, is kind of Founders Week, if you will, and we'll be kind of leading up to that all year. So and kind of what we really want to kind of show with programs like on Founders Day weekend, all of these different things we're doing, is just how diverse not only our story is here at the park, but just the Park Service in general. And really, like, kind of our purpose is showing that, you know, people can find connections to this park, even if at first glance they don't realize that they're going to find a story that's relevant to their lives. People will can see this as a space that's their own, because really that's the point of national parks, is that they are ours to kind of protect for the future. So and that's really kind of the one of the goals of the centennial is, you know, kind of and reaching out to these new audiences, encouraging this next generation of park goers to make a, you know, a personal and deep connection to their public lands. So that's what we're really hoping to highlight is, you know, that there's, even if people don't have a direct, almost immediate connection to this Civil War era story, there's something about the story of our park that people can connect to. And so hopefully everyone will be able to find that. So,
well, and you mentioned, Becky, at the beginning of this, when we started talking about this, just the fact that this is more than just a year thing, that that you want to get people to get involved with the park, and in future years, you'd like to see, because I notice a lot of times with just some of the programs I always go to, too often, you'd like to see younger people get the vision and start coming to these things.
Absolutely. And that's really one of the most important things about the centennial, at least in my opinion, is this is a beginning. This is the start of something. And it's the start of our second century, but it's also the start of, you know, taking out the time to really think about what we do, how we do it, and how we can make it better. So, and we do want to see that next generation, or even just new audiences, you know, making those connections with the park and understanding that these are places for them. They're not places for us. We love them, but they're places for everyone. So they're not places for just us. And that's what we're really hoping to see is you know, people making a connection, and we want, you know, that next generation to grow up and maybe want to be a park ranger, or, you know, have good associations and bring their kids to the park in the future. So I believe that if we, you know, really think thoughtfully about our the future of our organization, we'll be able to accomplish those goals. So,
I guess one of the things to either you've got a Facebook page, a fabulous Facebook page that Beth, you always you keep up to date, and Becky, you too. You do webmaster. You're the kind of the webmaster, aren't you, for the whole parks? So stay up with social media, because there's always information there about a lot of what these programs and, you know, dates and times and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so stay tuned, because most of the information here that we're, you know, the programs we're talking about, all the dates and times and details will be on our website. So just keep an eye out, and we'll certainly be giving heads up on our social media. So, yeah, just stay tuned.
Social media has been one way, and just whether it's social media has been a great way to get out a lot of this information that in the past, you really had no way to get out unless a person actually came and saw this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's so much easier or just better to reach people than, say, a plain press release. I mean, social media gives us an opportunity to not only advertise our programs, but to talk about what's going on around the park, so keep people updated on our projects. You know, people are always asking, well, what do you do in the wintertime when no one comes? So it's a way for us to show that, but it's also a way for us to hold conversations, and important conversations, share pieces of our history. The Facebook page and our Twitter and YouTube, it's just been a fabulous way to reach out to people.
You've been able to show the pen,
and show the pen every year.
It is, and there's the kinds of artifacts, and some of it you don't even rotate around because you've got so much stuff, and that all changes. Especially with Facebook, you've been able to tell individual soldier stories, which always sometimes can be just really powerful.
Oh yeah, and that's what we try to do, is to highlight certain individuals or different stories from within our park to show what all we have to offer. Because a lot of folks, you know, they'll only get to the park every so often, or if they don't live nearby, as we talked about earlier, they might come here once in their lives. And I know, having gone out west and fallen in love with a lot of the parks out there, I love following them on social media because they'll put up a picture and I'll say, yes, I can't wait to go back. Or I love this park. And so it's also a way for people to stay engaged and connected to our stories when they can't come and visit, and learn new stories every time. So I think it's a fabulous way, not only to reach new people, but to stay connected and to learn new stories and to really engage with what we have in the park.
The centennial of the National Park Service is this year. That's what we're talking about this morning with Becky Oakes and Beth Parnitza, historians with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We'll wrap it up when we come back on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Guests appearing on today's show are News Talk 1230 WFVA advertising partners sponsoring this broadcast. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It is the centennial of the National Park Service. That's been our focus this morning with Becky Oakes, Beth Parnitza, historians with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. I had actually last night considered asking you two to sing Happy Birthday to the National Park Service, but then thought, no, I didn't. After that, you would go back to, you'd go back and tell your bosses, we're never going back there again.
Your listeners would say we're never listening to that.
Well, yeah. that could be. But this is really an exciting time. And I know it kind of began last summer at some of the History at Sunset programs. You had a National Park Service centennial flag, and you would talk a little bit about it. And it's here now. And like you both have said this morning, Becky, this is really a good chance to maybe appreciate and learn a little bit about an important Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. It's for tourism and economic development, and there's a lot of things that the Park Service does for this area.
Sure. And if you are interested in learning more about what kind of the Park Service does and what it's done in the past, definitely kind of come out and check our programming for not only the spring and the summer, but in the fall as well. We're going to have, a lot of you are familiar with our traditional History at Sunset programs in the summer. And we're going to have some of those programs actually focus on park history. We'll be doing some talks at the library, focusing on kind of the National Park Service as a historic organization and where we are now. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity for people to really learn about the organization as a whole and Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania's particular kind of history with the National Park Service. So it's going to be a really fun year.
There was last spring, a naturalization ceremony at Chatham, Beth. Is that going to, I know the hope was that that would become an annual event.
Yeah, so we're looking to do that again toward the end of June. Our current date is June 24th for a naturalization ceremony again at Chatham. And that was one of the sort of unique things, I think, that we did last year. And it was very moving for anybody who was present to say, you know, this, we've talked about how, you know, for the national parks, this land really is our land. Mm-hmm. And so it was very neat to welcome new citizens in a national park and say, hey, this is part of your heritage now. This is part of who you are becoming. And we welcome you, and you know, stick around and learn a little bit more about the place that you now call home.
And again, as Becky mentioned, the checked social media, and we'll talk about it here too. Just some of the programs that we'll start developing and being out soon, and then a lot of the history at Sunset, and there are always a lot of programs. Starting May is a big month just because of the battles of Chancellorsville and Spotsylvania, and I'm sure there'll be those kind of special programs too again this summer, spring.
Yeah, we are definitely looking to do some battle anniversary programs coming up in May. We have our Fit History Hike series that's starting very soon.
Yeah, that's something new. Real quick, explain what the Fit History Hikes are, because that's a little bit different.
Yeah, so I think most people who come out on our programs are used to us talking a lot because, well, that's what we do. But the Fit History Hikes are designed to cover more ground, so we'll be longer hikes, usually from 2 to 6 miles, and a little bit more walking and a little bit less talking. So you'll still get the history because we can't help ourselves. And we want people to experience and to know what they're walking over. But part of the idea is just to get out and cover more ground, use the park's trail system. We have so many great trails in the park, and get out and experience them.
April 23rd is the Junior Ranger program. If someone's interested in that, is all the information you have online on that?
It will be very soon. We're finishing up kind of what our program will look like.
Okay, so that is April 23rd, the Junior Ranger program. And then you mentioned just for teachers, the Ticket to Ride, if they want to get involved and find out more about that.
Yeah, we have an education section on our website for teachers to look at what resources we have, so you can find some more information there. And then, you know, if you have questions, by all means, get in touch with the park. We'd love to hear from you.
Beth Parnitza, Becky Oaks, Fredericksburg, Spotsylvania National Military Park, thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Guests appearing on today's program are advertising partners who have purchased commercial airtime on WFVA and have been offered the opportunity to sponsor this broadcast. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.